All right, here we go again. Aviv, how have you been?
It's been good. It's been a while. Good to see you. Good to be back.
This is Sports Content Kings, talking to today's brightest minds in sports and entertainment.
Welcome to Sports Content Kings, brought to you by WSC Sports, a podcast dedicated to today's brightest minds in sports, figuring out the latest trends and technologies shaping the industry. I'm Aviv, one of the founders of WSC Sports and Chief Business Development Officer. Happy to be here together with my brother.
And I'm Shaka, VP Revenue at WSC Sports. And we are the Arnone Brothers. And today we are joined by Stan Kasten. He's one of the most prominent executives in the sports industry. He's currently the president and co-owner of the LA Dodgers. This has been a great conversation. We thank Stan for coming, and we hope you all enjoy. Stan, hello. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Good to see all of you here today.
Why don't you start? We'll just have a chit-chat about sports industry as we spoke. And why don't you start by giving our listeners your own introduction to yourself, your career, anything you want to tell us, and how we came to this day and what you're up to this during these days.
I graduated law school in 1976. I went right to work for Ted Turner before there was a thing called the Superstation. That's how far back I go. And I was with Ted for 27 years. Starting out, I became the general manager of the Hawks. He later made me the president of the Hawks and then president of the Braves. And after that, we built an arena. We got an expansion hockey team. I became president of that also. It was a nutty idea then. It still is a nutty idea, but there you go. After 27 years, as Turner Broadcasting was spinning off its sports properties, I left and became the president of the Washington Nationals, the new baseball team in Washington. And after 5 years there, I left to join with my partner, Mark Walter, and also Magic Johnson, et cetera, to buy the Dodgers. And we have been here since 2012, and I can tell you it has been an awful lot of fun since then.
All right, that's great. It was a quick rundown, but it's evident that you've been, you know, at the big leagues, at the forefront and building championship material teams, I'll say that. So it's a unique vantage point to see all three leagues. Can you maybe give us an insight to, you know, you had at one period, you had two teams at the same time, correct? From two different leagues.
It was three. Yeah. 4 years I did three, which was, as I said, ridiculous, but yeah.
Okay. So can you give us maybe your take on the differences, maybe some of the nuance that people, it's hard to know what you maybe take for granted at this point?
Well, there are for sure differences in each sport. The most important is identification of talent for that sport. Internationally, we pick the talent for all of the three sports from three different parts of the globe. Baseball is a Latin America and Pacific Rim hotbed for baseball. Hockey players are mostly in Eastern Europe, and basketball players are in Western Europe. So there are a lot of differences there. And of course, the type of athletes, the things you're looking for are different. What I have found, though, that is similar and that crosses throughout sports teams and even companies are the things I talk about in my corporate speeches. I focus on the three pillars that we talk to every employee about. We focus on our product, our customer, and our brand. I think that works for corporations. In a sports setting, your product is your team, your customer involves your stadium and environment and what you provide to them. And your brand is your community relations effort, what you do throughout your market to continue to connect you to your customer base. And I think those things are true no matter what sport you're in and really no matter what business you're in. If you pay attention to those three things, you will have success.
I think we're talking about 45 years of being at the top of sports organizations. And that throughout this period, there's been major changes, right? So, and you're talking about generally what you say in corporate talks, but I think like running a sports brand or a sports organization, like your clients are not like the every, like the other clients of a bank or of an insurance company. Your clients are fans. That's passion. That's fandom. Your brand is part of your product, because when you're selling to a sponsor or when you're working to grow the commercial business of, besides winning games of your team, like that's part of the product itself. Now, I want to ask about that, but also say you start like in the 80s, that was the first years, let's say the NBA of David Stern became a commissioner. We have a long history with David, and unfortunately we lost him a few years ago, but like the change and how sports media changed throughout those years also is incredible. And each league and each, that's NBA, then MLB, and then NHL, has followed this path of like of the changing landscape of sports, and you've been throughout that. So can you talk to us about that?
It's interesting. There is a truism that the delivery mechanism for sports product changes every 20, 25 years. A century ago, you would get scores by telegraph, okay? Then came newspapers, then came radio, then came television, then came cable, then came streaming. And digital. And I used to joke, I don't know what the next delivery system is. I assume it's little dancing holograms on your coffee table playing the game. I used to joke about that. And just this weekend, I saw someone developing an app that would literally put players as holograms on your dining room table playing the game. So that might actually happen. And that's interesting that delivery systems continue to evolve. What is important, though, to remember, Ted Turner used to say this. Ted Turner, who developed CNN and a bunch of other channels, he always invested in software. He always invested in content. He never invested in hardware, in systems, in set-top boxes. That was not him. He always invested in content because he recognized if you control the content, you'll find a way to monetize it. You'll find the best delivery system for that. That has always been true. It's what makes sports unique among TV content properties. You have to watch it live to really benefit from it. There's a different ending every night. It's just different from any other kind of content. And that has always been true, and it continues to be true. And I think will continue to be true in the future.
Can you speak a little bit about the adoption of the different changes across the different leagues? There's some that embrace it earlier and some that maybe take a more conservative approach. And how much does the team have a say in what and how to go about it? And you as an owner?
In league settings, those kinds of decisions are made at the league level in the best interests of all of the teams. Now, in the United States, there are specific legislation that has allowed teams to come together to sell their properties together, whereas otherwise you might not be allowed to. That itself is under challenge right now because those laws were passed for television, and we're not in the television era anymore. So we don't know if those laws apply to digital streaming. We don't know. So we're all still learning. I think, though, most leagues are set up to be early adopters because we're always looking for the next best way to reach consumers, in a way that works for them and works for us, to be able to monetize it as efficiently as we can while still keeping the largest consumer base. You're watching all the leagues right now go through a process of spreading out their partners, whether they have five different networks or platforms. You're seeing it in football. I think you're about to see it more and more in baseball. And so we have to be prepared for that. It was unthinkable a generation ago, but I think it's more and more of our future. Very soon now, we will be able to have a tailored broadcast for every individual in a direct-to-consumer way. I don't know the exact method we will have for delivering that. You guys will be involved in that for sure. Whatever happens, I do know that. But it's an exciting time to be in the media business. And if you think about reaching each person individually, thinking about how you can maximize that experience for them, that's really the path going forward, because that seems like we were all moving toward.
Sure. Now, in the short term, I think what you said presents a little bit of a challenge for the fan, because you have the game is on Mondays on this network, and on Tuesdays and Thursdays it's on that channel. That you have a lot to navigate through. So that's what's happening now, as you said, with the leagues are able to slice and dice. But eventually, I think, as you said, eventually this will be presented to the fan in a much more palpable way, or a way that's much more tailored.
In a minute, there will be an app that does that for you. You push a button, it tells you where to go, or takes you there, right? If it doesn't exist already, it probably does. If not, you should invent it. But I agree, there's temporary confusion. We will have to deal with that, but that's just one more hurdle. We're all used to dealing with challenges. It seems to me that's a small one in the scheme of things.
Stan, can I ask you then, let's talk about your role as a president in a team. Like, how much of it is, we talked about the product and having a good product and a good brand. Like, how much of your business is commercializing the business or winning games? You were at in the 80s at the Superstars area, you had Dominic Wilkins, you built the Braves to win the championship. And that in itself, I think, drives revenue and business. But how much of your time is actually sports winning games versus running a business like every other company?
Well, your product is an incredibly important component of what you do. I think a good team can overcome bad marketing. I don't think a bad team can help good marketing, I think. So your product is always going to be at the forefront of everything you're doing. There are ways to maximize the dollars spent, and different teams have found their own path to achieve that. But you can't separate the importance of all of these elements. They're all important. If I ignored one of those three elements that I call my pillars, it would cut a hole in our business model. So they're all important. We have dedicated staffs, full-time people, full-time hardworking people with real budgets in all three of those areas. And I can't tell you which is more important, other than you've got to have a good product or you don't have a business.
I think now basically being in a market like LA is, I think, does a part of the work, but of course you have to have an appealing product and an appealing team. But there are some markets where I think they have an easier barrier to cross. And that brings me, actually, I wanted to ask you, moving from being a president just as an employee to being an owner, actually you became an investor and now owning the team that you work for. So can you tell us about that journey? How did this change and your move to LA?
When I left Atlanta, I was ready for my next chapter, which I knew would include elements of ownership. And so I did that in Washington. And then when I came here, I was intimately involved, as I had been in Washington, in putting together the group that bought the team and bringing Magic Johnson in to meet with Mark Walter and the rest of our partners. But once we bought the team, then the job was the same. It was being president. It was running this. It was setting it up to be successful across all the areas in which we need to be successful. You're right. We're blessed with a market like LA, but LA also has a dozen pro teams and the ocean, right? And the sunshine and a lot of other competitive forces, but I wouldn't change it. It's still a wonderful market to be with a sports team, especially a team with the history and the connection to our fan base that we have at the Dodgers.
And I don't know if it's appropriate to ask, but now with Mark Walter acquisition of the Lakers, do you have any involvement in that or anything we can anticipate in the future with you being able to juggle so many teams in the past?
It's all part of the family. So yes, I'm involved in the family. Let's leave it at that. Yeah, I'm not running new teams, but we have competencies that we have developed here at the Dodgers in data on the court or on the field, in business analytics, in venue design, in sponsorship sales. And we're going to try to do our best to leverage these competencies across all of our properties. And yeah, that includes being involved with. Now, listen, I've been involved with the Lakers for most of my life. I was in the NBA. I've known Jeannie Buss since she was a teenager. I was in the room when Jerry Buss was voted into the NBA. One of my partners owns the Golden State Warriors, and another one of my partners is a 6'9 point guard in the Hall of Fame. So we've been close to this for most of my life, and that appears not to be changing. By the way, our ownership group also owns the Sparks in the WNBA. So among other things, we're deeply involved in basketball, but we're involved in everything. We're involved in hockey. We're involved in tennis. We're involved in Formula One with our new team starting next year. We're involved in soccer with Chelsea. So we have a lot of things going on, and we think each of these teams brings unique competencies that we can all learn from and benefit from.
New Formula One team is a big one. But let me circle back to what you said Ted Turner told you, invest in software. So you touched maybe a little bit, but can you drill down to some of the investments that you as an owner, as a president, are putting into software and into technology and into all these developments through the Dodgers and through your product, I will say?
Well, it came to content, own the content. That was his way of describing it. And we've certainly done that. The first thing we did when we got here was make a deal to start a brand new Dodger-only channel. We sold it to Time Warner, which became Charter. And we've been very successful with that. That deal has propelled us in many ways to the success that we've had. The guaranteed revenue streams that it delivered to us enable us to make the investments in our stadium, in our community, and in our team that has allowed us to continue to have success. We've been in the playoffs 12 straight years. We're very proud of that record. But we think we're the Dodgers, and all caps, you know? We think we have a legacy, we have a history that demands that from us. Our fans who have been loyal to this team for 60 years expect it and demand it and deserve it. And so we take that responsibility very seriously. And so that's why we spend so much money on our team and our stadium and our delivery systems like Sportsnet LA. This is us investing in our fans, which gives them reason to continue to invest in us. I've been told comparatively that it's expensive to come to a game at Dodger Stadium. And yet 50,000 people a night make the decision to do that. It's because they believe we are investing in them. They continue to invest in us. It's a virtuous cycle that, again, I'm very proud of.
Following up on this question, I'm not sure if you have anything to say about it, but you were mentioning that you have assets like business data and things that you built at the Dodgers that could help other organizations in the group. I think as the landscape is changing and as we're talking that soon we're going to be seeing the game probably as a hologram on the table, the data of the fans, of the engagement, of the content, like owning that as part of the asset and being able to then service your product in different ways. Like we're basically talking these days about actually learning what each fan is engaging with, what they care about, what they like the most, how can we offer the best experience basically to each one of us? Because think about your fantasy team or the player you follow or the game that you attended. There's a lot of unique individualism to being a fan, and the team knowing that and owning that data and that relationship is part of your asset that you could eventually keep building the next generation products and the next experiences for your fans.
Well, you're right. We take that mission of learning our fans and their proclivities and their desires very seriously. We have a company that we've spun off, was probably in your class at the Accelerator, called Demand Analytics, and it now provides analysis. We have 18 teams that we are working with to help them understand their customer, help them understand their pricing. When we started this project, we were with an entity that only allowed us to segment our tickets and our prices into 26 categories. Today, we're in like 400 categories. The funny thing is we only had 26, because they had, each one was a letter of the alphabet, so all they could accommodate was 26. We're much deeper into that process.
That's now. The hardware.
So we now can...
That's the hardware. It could only code 26 right. notes.
You
know yeah. Okay.
So now we're much deeper into understanding. Yes, we have tickets for $1,000. We also have parking for $5, right? We can accommodate any budget, any demographic, any ethnic group. We try to appeal to all of them. It's not always possible on a daily basis, but we do our best. We do enough to get a consistent 50,000 people a night here, and we're very proud of that.
Yeah, Dodger Stadium, Phil, when you go there, it feels like you go on a day trip. You go a little bit outside, you have a little walk to go into the stadium.
And we have improved that in the last few years, adding a center field plaza, like almost 3 acres of entertainment and food and history and kids and music and that wasn't there for the first 60 years. So we've improved the experience. I like to call it a historic, iconic venue, but it's now a 21st century experience. And that's what we had to do. That was our mission. And so far, I think we're delivering on that mission.
Maybe let's dive into your experience of building those teams, those championship teams. When did you know that this is something good? This could be a winning team. This could be a championship material team. Does this happen at some point? You know, you start over the summer or, you know, over the off season, you say, okay, this is it. You nailed it. Or it's a much more evolutionary process over the years.
Well, that's a great question. And the truth is every situation is different. Let's start with the Braves. When I was running the Hawks and Ted asked me to take over the Braves in 1986. And I told him, let me take a couple of weeks to figure out what we have. And I'll get back to you with what I think. And I did. And here's where we were at that time. We were a last place team with the highest payroll in baseball, which think about it. It's almost hard to do if you're trying to do that on purpose. That was a really bad place to be. And poor minor leagues. And we had under 1 million attendance. We had nobody coming to our sport. And I told this to Ted, and I told him that we had a history of letting the TV ad people drive our decisions. So we would always sign free agents that, you know, and you can't build it through free agency, which I explained to Ted. I said, we have to invest in the minor leagues. It's a longer term play. It will succeed. But for a couple of years, I'm going to be the village idiot on the TV and radio talk shows. Thank God there wasn't Twitter back in those days. But he said, Stan, I don't need a lecture. Just go do it. Now, many owners say that. Yes, long-term plan. Yes, we're investing. Yes, yes, yes. And then as soon as you lose 2 games in a row, people start getting fired. That was not Ted. When Ted says, Stan, just do it, he actually meant it. And so we invested in our minor leagues and our player development. And for my first 4 years, yeah, we were under 1 million attendance. But then when we finally were ready to turn the corner, finally ready to sign free agents as the final pieces, then we got very good. And we had 14 years in a row of winning the division and averaging over 3 million attendance. So that was one part of the process. Washington, we got to, they hadn't even had baseball for 32 years. So we had to build fans one at a time. It was very much an expansion team because baseball had been setting the team up for sale and so had made no investment in the minor leagues or scouting or et cetera. So we had to start from scratch there too, build a front office apparatus, which we did. And eventually they went on to win a World Series with that group that we had put together. Contrast that with the Dodgers. The Dodgers had this long history down on their luck in the last couple of years before we came in, but they had a fan base that never left, that was consistently coming to the ballpark, 3 million people a year. They deserved and expected a team that was good now as well as in the long term. Now, most places you can't do, they can't afford to do both, but the marketplace in LA is so robust and so large that if we did our job, we could do both at the same time. That was unique, that opportunity. So we took advantage of that. We put a team on the field in that first year that was able to win, and we built a farm system that gave us a pipeline that filled in year after year. So again, the answer is different in every situation. In some cases, I knew it was going to take years. Some cases, I knew we'd be good right away. But I think you always have to have your vision on your long-term plan, because the only success worth having is sustained success. And you can't do that without your long-term plan.
I think a lot of owners understand that. But it's not only about understanding that. It's you need to have that conviction to do it too.
And you have to have an owner that is willing to let you do it, let professionals do what they do. And it helps when he's so busy doing other more important things that he lets you do it. I'm not joking about that. That really is important. If I had to write a book on management, I told people, it would be 8 words long, and also the title of the book. And that is, hire good people, let them do their job. Sounds very simple, right? Sounds very simple. It's deceptively hard. If it was that simple, why wouldn't you see it done more often, right? In all three cases, I think we were able to hire the best people. We were enabled to empower them to do their job with the direction, with the support, and with the finances and time that those jobs require. And I'm proud of the results.
Yeah, and you should, and there's a lot to be proud of. But I have a question, challenge on that. Like, if the process is so long and you need years in the making and you need the nerves and to hold your breath and let the process fulfill itself, how do you know if you're not in the right direction throughout it? Maybe you didn't hire the right person. You just let them be and they keep failing you over time. How do you know that this is the right direction when you're not getting results yet?
Well, first of all, you have to make sure everyone is aligned on the same game plan, right? But I can't kid you. We make mistakes. We do hire the wrong people. You just have to be willing to appreciate that and make changes along the way. There are always mid-course corrections. When we send a rocket to the moon, we have mid-course corrections, okay? So building a team is, I would say, less complicated than that. There are times when you have to make changes, times you have to fire people. But in general, what's called the 75 or 80% of staying on the right path involves having good people, letting them do their job.
Can I ask, what are you most proud of then? Like, I mean, you had such a long career, so many achievements. Like, is there something you can point at and say, wow?
My answer is, it hasn't happened yet. I'm always looking for the next thing, okay? I'm always looking for the next thing of which to be proud. I can tell you, having grown up in New York, having been a Yankee fan, having lived at Yankee Stadium, winning a World Series in Yankee Stadium was extraordinarily fulfilling. Let me just leave it at that. That was very cool. Not just for me, but increasingly for the whole world, because on top of all that, we had layered in the whole Shohei insanity. It was a very cool year.
But it's a good answer. I want to use that.
Yeah, I'll take that too. Something, whoever didn't listen, wouldn't listen to this podcast, we can then use this sentence on them in the future.
Okay, so trying to look back, you're not putting something that you're most proud of. Let's look forward. What are you most looking forward to? What is most exciting to you in, first of all, for the Dodgers and in terms of the media, sports media evolution and
predictions?
I actually said this yesterday. What I'm proud of our philosophy and that I see it enables us to have sustained success. What do I mean by that? We have a lot of teams, and as we're trying to incorporate the competencies from each team, many teams say, okay, we could use your help here, here, and here, but that other thing, we've got that. We've got that. Even though objectively, they don't got that, all right? But they're unwilling to open up their eyes. I see that a lot, not just with teams associated with us, but all over. I will say I have sat through lectures recently on AI, okay? Now, we're really good at what we do. I think all evidence suggests the Dodgers are good at what they do. And my belief is we're not good enough, that we need to know the next thing. We need to stay ahead of the pack. Maybe it's AI. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's technology. Maybe it's stadium design. I don't know what it is, but I think we have a philosophy of keeping an open mind for new things to be better. If we just sit back on the way we've always done it, that's a road to ruin, or that's a road to falling off the track. We here at the Dodgers, and I hope at all of our teams, are open, in fact, curious about the next thing so that we continue to stay good indefinitely. People say, well, how long is your window to win? We don't allow that in our vocabulary. We don't have a window. We're the Dodgers. We're supposed to contend every year. That's our legacy, and that's our mission going forward. And so we won't accept anything less than that.
Makes a lot of sense. Sounds good. And actually, I want to echo that. Like, as a tech startup, when you start, when you have a promise or a vision, and you try to figure out and create a new market, a new ecosystem. But then, if you're not looking forward, if you are not innovating, keep growing as fast, and find the next innovation and the next big thing, then you might find yourself obsolete and irrelevant really quickly. So. We are also facing this in technology, which is changing so fast, always trying to figure out what's the next big thing, because like some of our big partners that are innovators in sports media are always like, we're working on something. We're in the middle of a big project, something we've been working on for a couple of years. They're like, okay, that's great. But like, we're already working on it. What's next? You know, like even while you're implementing that something, you need to come up with the next vision.
Well, I will say this, in the locker room, in Yankee Stadium, when we're all being drenched in champagne, Shohei came to me and he said, 9 more to go. That's the attitude. That's the attitude we wanted. And if he said it, I can believe it. I can believe it.
That's great. I think it's a perfect finish, perfect wrap up.
But you're invited back after we win our next one. Please check back with me to see how we did. And I'll always be happy to talk to you guys.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot of shared challenges, I think. And it's been really good to hear this from you. And we've had this relationship for a few years. I mean, I'd love to share ideas and show you what we also are thinking of, like, because this AI world is changing so fast and we're trying to be there to help sports media figure this out. So we'll be in touch.
Terrific. Thank you, guys. It was good talking to both of you.
Thank you, Stan. It was great. Thank you so much.
It was a great chat, and we got a lot to strive to and a lot to learn from Stan. And I think there's a few takeaways from there.
And look, again, the unique perspective that he can bring, the decades of experience and seeing, even just MLB experience, right? Because that's what maybe is the most relevant right now. Just moving for different towns, franchises that have history, franchises that are fresh, you know, starting it from scratch. It's looking at things from very different angles, and it's really interesting to see his take.
And the rapid changes, I love this answer. He told us to us offline that his kids are doing things that didn't even exist when he asked them as children what they want to be when they grow up. The answers that they gave. Of being a policeman, astronaut, whatever. Today, they're doing things that didn't even exist back then. So that's what he anticipates for our children as well. And with the pace that things are changing, this is what makes it so interesting.
All right, this was great. Viv, till next time.
Till next time.
Cheers. Thanks to all of you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please rate us and leave a review or share the show with a friend. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please do so now so that you never miss a new episode. We're your hosts. I am Shaka.
And I'm Aviv. We are the Arnon Brothers, and this has been Sports Content Kings by WSC Sports. Thank you all for joining, and looking forward to seeing you here again.